BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Believe in OK State podcast. I am Megan Robinson, joined as always by Justin Southwell. And Justin, we have a special guest today who I will let you introduce since you were the one who secured him for this episode. So Justin, take it away.
Here's a guy that needs no introduction, but I'm going to give one anyway. He's been on the show before, but it has been 75 episodes since we've heard from him. We've got to catch up with the legend, the infectious Nehemiah Mundy. Mundy, like, bro, I don't know what it is about you. You got something about you, but there's a, when you're on and you've got this positive energy, it is infectious. And everybody around you gets lifted up by that. So I had to shout that out for you, man. Appreciation right there. You're just a really special guy. Glad to have you on the pod.
I'm glad to be here, man. Thank you guys for having me. You know, it's what it's been. You guys did 75 episodes since the last time I've been here. Dang, you guys been killing it. That's good though. I'm glad to hear it.
But you said 75, and I was like, I mean, I know that this is our 86th episode, but to have 75 episodes in between a guest, I'm like, dang. I am trying to figure out where the heck I was the last time Nehemiah was on, because I was not here that day. And it was week 11, I think, of 2022. And I'm like, what was I doing? I don't know. Nothing memorable.
You're hiding from Iowa State.
Probably.
And it worked out. If you need to do that again, like next season, whenever we play him again, just take that week off, because it worked out for us in 2022. Just want to say that.
And I didn't take the week off of Iowa State in 2023. So maybe we're on to something here.
All right. We got to do what we got to do. And if that's part of it, hey.
Man, they do always seem to have our number. So it's every time that game show comes up on the schedule, it's brings back a lot of nightmares. So yeah, don't have me on that week anymore either. I don't like it.
You're like, yeah, I know. It was a weird vibe the whole time, but yeah. You had your prediction was correct. I went back, we looked at the prediction. You guess, hey, Nehemiah has spoken. That's the thing.
The old adage.
And it turned it into, once again, a fulfilled prophecy from Nehemiah Mundy.
We don't even play Iowa State.
Beautiful. Even better.
So, you know, we don't even need, yeah. Have you looked at our schedule for this season?
I have not, but I understand the Big 12 is expanding this year, right? So we're playing, Arizona and UCF.
So
I'm like, who are these teams? I'm like, what's going on here?
Yeah. So we don't play Arizona or UCF in the regular season.
Okay.
But Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah are all joining the conference this year on top of the teams that joined last year. So the new teams that we will face this year on our schedule are Utah and Arizona State. Those are the two newcomers that we are guaranteed to play this year.
And we're kind of already familiar with Arizona State just Correct. Based on the last couple of seasons. So,
yeah. And are they separating North and South like they once did, or is it just?
Nope.
Wow.
Yeah. Not yet. Yeah. I feel like that might happen in the future.
I think it has to, but a lot of people are like picking Arizona or Utah, and they're way too early Big 12 championship game predictions. So, So that's what we were going to get into spring practice, but well, we're here right now. So in an earlier episode back in February, we discussed FanDuel's over under for the conference. They put OSU at 7.5. you know, we're seventh in the conference in the over under numbers. People are saying that, you know, look out for Arizona and Utah. By the way, Arizona's coach left. They have a new coach from the group of five level. So like, why do you think that Oklahoma State is constantly in this position of disrespect, for lack of better words?
Well, I don't want to say the other school's name. However, I view it as, if we remove the state part of from our name, and we have the same exact, we have, I think, believe 20 players coming back this year.
21.
Now, if this was any other major school, they would probably be ranked in the top five, top 15 at minimum. So the disrespect's been going on forever since we've got cheated out of the national championship game back in, well, I'm not even going to bring that up, but it's, I don't know why every year I feel we're overlooked. I just don't get, I don't understand it. I will never understand it, because there's no reason for us to not even, we should be in the top 10, hands down, with that many players coming back. So
what's crazy is, like, we're giving them what it should be just a layup, right? With all of the change going on in college football with the transfer portal, you would think they would value something like continuity a little bit more. And there's one team that just stands out above all the others when it comes to continuity, and it has been this way for 15 years. And still, here we are, right where Gundy wants us.
What's absolutely wild to me is that in some of the articles I've read and, you know, skimmed this week trying to figure out what to talk about in our show, is some people have questioned the talent level of the players coming back. And it's the Doak Walker Award winner, the leading tackler in the Big 12, and Nick Martin, Colin Oliver, Kendall Daniels, who both won defensive freshman of the year as freshmen. You know, Kendall fell off as strong, but he didn't have as strong of a season last year, but, you know, still made some really big plays when it mattered. He did have really big plays. You have three different receivers who had multiple games with over 100 yards receiving. So, like, where is this lack of talent or questions around the talent that people are seeing, is my question to everybody.
I don't see it. And the most important that we've all forgot, I believe we have the entire offensive line coming back as well, if I'm not mistaken. So that is like the main core of your offense. And you have every single one of them coming back. Lack of talent. I think we had last year two receivers almost hit 1,000 yards receiving, if I'm not mistaken. Well, one, I think, is he still coming back?
Right, real close. You know, you make a good point, though, like kind of a combination of both of what you guys are saying. I was a little bit skeptical of our offensive line before last season, because I thought, hey, just because they're coming back doesn't mean you're good. But then they proved me wrong. Like, they actually showed up and turned Ollie Gordon into a Doak Walker Award-winning running back. And you don't do that with a below average offensive line. You just don't. Now, all those guys are coming back. If there's any questions based off last year, if these guys actually watched Oklahoma State play last year, maybe they're talking about the defense because of where they ranked in some of these statistical categories. But even then, I've got to think, why wouldn't they get better? Why wouldn't they elevate their game? So again, I'm just wondering, 7.5 just seems disrespectful.
Even so, though, South, I think in the turnovers category, we were ranked in the top 20 in the nation. I think we had, 23 turnovers or in the Big 12, I'm sorry. Defensively, I didn't think we're that bad. There's just a couple of tweaks here and there that I think would turn it around. Again, we had a lot of young stars too, starting, and playing. So I don't, like you said, I don't see us getting worse. The only thing we could do is get better, because now you have another year under your belt. I just don't understand the disrespect, where it's coming from. But it's been dang near every year, the disrespect we get, you know.
It's another good point, though, that you said, because it's another year under your belt, not just for those players, but it's the second year of Coach Nardo's defensive scheme. Last year was brand new to these guys.
Right.
But also, you have their third DC in three seasons.
Exactly. Right. Now we finally have some continuity going into next year. And again, with this same group of guys, so many guys coming back. But Mundy, with second year of Nardo, I mean, you probably know better than us, because you actually transferred from UNLV to Oklahoma State. You know what it's like to switch coordinators, even switching sides of the ball with you playing both defensive back and receiver. But from your point of view, what are you thinking about Nardo at this point in his career?
I think from last year, I think he's a good coach, but at the same time, it's the adjustment that had to be made by the players going from one scheme to another. You know, I believe he was running a 3-3. I haven't even seen that in a while. So I can understand how the players would, it'd be kind of hard to adjust, you know, especially when you've got three D linemen and then three linebackers, and you got O linemen coming free at the linebackers. That's just thinking about it. It's everything would just be hard to adjust. What kind of defensive coverages would you run in 3-3? I just thinking off the top of my head, I couldn't pinpoint like how would the safeties be positioned and stuff like that. So, and I'm on the side, I'm just observing. So it'd probably be harder for the players to even trying to grasp it within the 12 games that they're playing, you know? So I can understand the ups and downs that they had last season, because it's a new defensive scheme. This year they have, again, they have a year under their belt. So it should be, they should have it down. I still kind of doubt that, but it should be a heck of a lot better than it was last year.
Well, you're talking about the DBs and the safeties, and, you know, you did have Kendall Daniels, who was kind of lining up as a safety, but also the rover to sort of be everywhere, which to your point, I can see how that can add confusion and chaos. It's like, well, if you're going to be everywhere, then where am I supposed to be? So I'm not in your way, but I'm also in the right coverage. But today at spring ball, cornerback Cam Smith was available to the media, and he was talking about last season and the defensive backs were a place where Oklahoma State struggled last year defensively. Mm-hmm. They got burned on some deep balls. You know, I think of the UCF game in particular. There was several deep balls that they got burned on, but they also, to be fair, they also were the heroes of Bedlam. So they had their moments, Cam Smith said today that learning from last season, that's all we talked about in the offseason. We were so close to being better, and we know the mistakes we made. This year, we want to have that chip on our shoulder with the Big 12 and the playoffs. And that brings, and he also said about with veterans team, it's not as much teaching on running from drill to drill or having to teach about effort or the speed that we're playing. A lot of the older guys are taking on that leadership role and just telling the other guys, this is how we do things, which going back to having 21 starters returning, they can take this spring to work on pace, speed, effort, and not the X's and O's per se. Yes, the X's and O's are important, but you can move faster through the playbook because you're not starting from scratch. It's how do we build on where we left off back in December?
Correct. So it's last year, it was kind of the X's and O's because you're still learning. You'll get a play call and you're like, all right, you're trying to remember that play. It's kind of like you're riding, when you start first riding a bike, right? You don't get it the first, second, third time. And then around the fourth, five times you try it after you fell down, you start kind of getting in, you're picking up speed, but then you fall down again every now and then. So this year, I think they could take the training wheels off, because now when they get a play, they're like, okay, I know what I'm doing. Now I just have to execute it instead of, they get to play him like, all right, because middle linebackers, they got to know what everybody's doing pretty much. And corners, depending if it's cover one, cover two, whatever, they kind of typically have to know what's going on with the blitzing and stuff like that. So when they get play calls, they're going to know now, okay, this guy's doing that, so I could do this. As to last year, like, you'll get that play and you might like, okay, what was I supposed to, or what was he supposed to do? So now it's, I think they got that under, should have it under control now. Now where they could just play and execute.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, you got to think about, so for me as an offensive player, back when we ran that offense, it was like, you know, here's a route concept. They didn't even call plays, you know, it's fast tempo offense with no huddle. Yep. So you're getting up there, they'll call like a route concept, and then you have to know based on your position what route you're running. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine Monday, it's probably very similar on the defensive side. So you call a coverage, and then based on what alignment the receivers are in, you know, linebacker's going to have a different guy than the safety's going to have a different guy. Corner's probably usually pretty easy. You got the furthest guy on the outside.
Right.
But you also got to know if we're doing bracket coverage or if we're going to do switch, if we're going to have, cover two, if I'm coming up on the outside to play the flats versus staying deep in quarters, because you're going to be vulnerable to that side of the field. So, you know, it's with everything being on the fly like that, adding to that, it's so easy to think, oh man, what happened here? Blown coverage. What's going on? Why? It's so obvious looking at it from the camera on TV. But unless you're like in that position and you're communicating, you're seeing that communication happen with your teammates, there's a lot of stuff that goes into football that I think a lot of people, they know about it, but maybe they forget about it in the moment whenever stuff like that happens.
And you're right. So trust is one of them. Like, again, as a defensive guy, you have to trust that the other guys on that field is going to do what they're supposed to do or be in that area where they're supposed to be. And cover two, hey, I'm jamming the receiver inside. I pray my linebacker's there, because if he's not, it's going to look like I got beat. You know, so that comes with the territory when you're learning new plays and you got to get familiar with everybody. And there shouldn't be any reason why they don't have trust in each other and the plays that are being called, because now they have a whole year under their belt. So they know what to do.
Well, Nehemiah, one of the additions to college football this year is that there will be a player on offense and defense who has the helmet communication with the coaches. So that's new rule that's being implemented this season. You know, we're getting closer and closer to the NFL.
Yeah, these guys have been ready for the league.
How do you think that new addition to college football can help players know where they're supposed to be on the fly?
So you're telling me one player is going to have it, right? So I'm guessing like
an offensive player and a defensive player.
Okay. So at first I think it's going to be a problem, because having somebody in your ear with all that, it's going to be an adjustment that's going to have to happen, unless they've been doing it throughout practice and the guy's already used to it. But in the game, it's a totally different thing. Will it help? I believe it'll help to an extent. Some majority of the time, I can imagine players are just going to get annoyed because the coach is just going to be in their ear all the time. So I can see it helping more than hurting, though, because before the play, obviously we'll get a play call and then you'll be able to make adjustments as you guys start to line up. They could quickly audible either on the offensive or defensive side. So, but during the, like before the play starts, when the clock's at 5 below seconds, I don't think it's even going to matter. There's not going to be enough time to switch or audible out of that.
Well, I think it shuts off with like 15 seconds left on the play clock, I think it was. So they have, you know, what is that, 25 seconds to get. But I feel like because you don't, if you have that in your ear, it could be beneficial instead of trying to look for the guys on the sideline calling the plays or the adjustments. You have someone exactly telling you exactly where you need to be or what the play call is on either side of the ball. So I feel like that direct communication could hopefully help them know – or help them scramble less.
So I think it would be better. It's going to be better for the coaches, because in our day, Southwell, what we had is hand signals and like signs we would put up. Well, the other coaches can't like kind of spy and get a read on what kind of play we would run. It'll help in that aspect. Other than that, especially with it being cut off with 15 seconds left, that's a lot of time for the other team to audible and stuff like that. So it could help. We're just gonna have to wait and see, because it could go either way, you know, for both teams. So I guess it's fair.
Actually, those signs were nothing. It was nonsense. It was a decoy. It was there to try to trick the other sideline into thinking you might be able to crack our code.
Yeah.
It's a shell game.
Mm-hmm. Way to ruin it for everybody, Justin. Like, now no one's going to take those signs seriously.
Well, we don't use them anymore, so.
Yeah, there you go.
I think some schools do. I feel like I still see them on the sidelines from time
to time. Hey, other schools, they might actually use them. For us at the time.
But wasn't it like, our first sign was like the actual play, and then all the other ones were just nonsense?
I thought it was all nonsense, to be honest.
I thought one of them, because we had, what was it? Was it this? I can't remember.
Well, talking about different hand signals. And absolutely, with the hand signals, they meant thing. I'm talking about like the flip book and the pictures.
No, I'm talking about the hand signals, because they were
hand signals. Those all meant different things. And you got different coaches on the sideline doing different signals.
Yeah, so because that was the aspect I was talking about. You know, they could see the hand signals now. They kind of don't need them, because you could just talk to the quarterback, you know.
Yeah. I think for the communication aspect, if you're going to have something like that in your ear, that if you come into Boone Pickens Stadium, good luck.
Yeah.
All right. I think we get those paddle people going. We get 55,000 screaming fans that are right on top of you. Good luck.
That's the truth. Yeah.
They're honestly, we've talked about it a little bit, and not to get too off track, but the atmosphere at a crowded Boone Pickens Stadium for a big time game is unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. That's all I had to say. That was it. That was my point.
I remember my first one. It was when I first came on campus, and I think I came to the game late, but on my way to the game, I noticed the entire town was like empty. Everyone was at the game. Everyone. It's like if somebody wanted to rob Stillwater, they could get away with it. Like that's how empty it was. It was crazy. And I've never experienced. Yeah, we have football out here in LA, but it's not. There's nothing like what it was in Oklahoma. It's like not even close.
And Monday, your first game ever was 2009 versus Georgia. And that was the grand opening of the new Boone Pickens Stadium with the West End Zone Bowl all filled.
Yep.
That game was absolutely, I mean, that was elite stuff right there.
Peacocks, AJ, was it AJ Green?
Yeah.
Yep. Peacocks, AJ Green, Dez Bryant. Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
What do you know about Dez Bryant?
I know a lot. I remember when I first met him. He interrogated me like, because I was just a transfer coming out. He interrogated me like I got arrested or something. He was just asking me a bunch of questions. Where am I from? What position I play? You know, just beat me down with questions. Like, he's like, I see you out on the field. I didn't know anything about outside of Oklahoma, any of the Big 12 schools. Oklahoma, Texas, that was it. Because I'm from LA, I didn't really know too much. And I'm like, who the heck is this guy? Like, why is he? I'm going to see him in practice, you know. But I gray-shirted when I transferred. So I couldn't play. I couldn't wear gear. I think it was spring ball. And Coach Gundy, at the end of practice, he would have offense against defense. And whoever wins doesn't have to run after practice. Like, they didn't have to do gassers.
Yeah.
So Dez is in the corner, And this is my first time like ever seeing him play or anything. He's like, so if offense scored first, it's over. Defense has to run. If defense stops offense, then offense has to run. Dez is sitting there. He's just bouncing up and down. Practice is over. I'm going home. And I'm looking at him. He's like, I'm going to run a post. Practice is over. So a post is a post route, right? And I'm like, there's no way he's going to run a post. And I'm looking at this. He runs a post. I think, what was it? I believe it was Zach Robinson.
Threw
it like a line drive to him. Ball was coming this way. And he in full stride, didn't break a stride, catches it like this and just keeps going. Scores, and he just runs out of the end zone, and the practice was over. And I was like, I got to keep my eye on this guy. That was the first time I ever seen Dez play ever.
Runs right in the tunnel. Practice is over.
Practice is over. That's it. So, yeah, Dez, I was like, this guy's he's going to be something special. And he probably was already. I didn't know it at the time. This was, what, 2009? Yeah.
He kind of had like an emerging 2008 season where it was like, ooh,
yeah,
he's pretty good. And watch out for this. I mean, he's definitely going to the NFL.
Yeah.
And at the time, I think it was like, we're expecting him to probably make a running for the Blitnikoff against Michael Crabtree.
Yep.
And then the suspension happens and all that.
Oh, my God.
And then he decided, you know, to just go ahead and go to the NFL after that. So
that season would have been a lot different if he played that whole season. It would have been a lot different.
Okay, so you obviously played with Dez, played with Whedon, Blackman, all those legends. Looking at the 2024 team, Ollie Gordon aside, we know who Ollie Gordon is. Who are the player or players that you are excited to see this year?
Presley's coming back, right? He's back, right? Uh-huh. That's who I'm excited. I like his route running ability. I like watching him play. He's big plays. I love the guy. That's who I'm excited to see.
And he spoke today at media availability for the team. I'm looking for the quote really quickly. People asked him why he decided to come back for his extra year of eligibility. He said, I'm not a finished product. I'll never be a finished product. But in terms of just working on little things like cuts and catching and knowing what I could be, I'm a better receiver than what I do show. I'm coming back for an extra year to get myself ready for that level, whether it's gaining weight, cuts, getting smarter, more knowledge of the game. So I think that he's coming back. I mean, he had a phenomenal year. He almost had 1,000 yards. He was like 10 yards short, I think, of a 1,000-yard season. Yeah, he had – or 9-yard short. He had 991. So, you know, could he have a 1,000-yard season? I think that he has a lot. Not a lot to prove. He's proven it. But I think that he personally feels like he has something to prove this Bundy, season.
This dude – squats 500 pounds.
I get you don't even have to. I can tell by the way he runs. I guarantee I'm gonna call it right now. One of the predictions, Sal, 1,000 yard season for him, easy by game 10th game of the season. He's gonna have 1,000 yards receiving.
Saying Brennan Presley is gonna get 1,000 yards is like easy. Saying OSU is gonna win more than 7.5 games.
Duh.
You got it. That's a Duh. It's a given.
Come on, bro. Is it a given? Yeah.
Here's why I think it's not a given, okay? Because you have incredibly talented athletes in that wide receiver room. I talked to Strib last week at practice, and I said, what word would you use to describe this wide receiver room? Without missing a beat, he goes, freaks. We are freak athletes.
It's been this way.
Yeah, that's just been that way since day one.
Coach Brewer.
Yeah, Coach Brewer, yeah.
Has it been the freak show since you guys? So that's inception. Been the freak show. But the fact that Strib is in his second season without skipping a beat, he says freaks. But also, you guys back it up. You back it up. And I think Brennan Presley could have a 1,000-yard season? Absolutely. But my point is, if he didn't, it would be because you have three receivers with 700-yard seasons, you know? True. Because Rashad Owens, last year, he had 895, five touchdowns. BP had 991, six touchdowns. Leon Johnson had 539, and he didn't even play every game, I don't think. And, you know, Strib was off to a really good start in his – he had a – like, I don't even know. I'd have to look really quickly. He played three or four games, and he had almost 200 yards in those games. Like, he was having a great start to the season. You know, so if BP doesn't get 1,000 yards, it's because you have three guys who have 700 apiece.
That's a decent point, but I just believe he's going to crack that 1,000 yard mark. It's got to be a goal. I'm sure that Bowman knows that. He's going to be in his ear a little bit. He's got to get it. And we also have to keep our star running back fresh. You know, you can't give him the same 30 plus carries a game like we were relying on him so much last year. You're going to have to open it up to those receivers, and especially Brennan Presley. He's just going to be able to get open.
That's what Sessie's for. That's what AJ Green's for.
That's also what the receiving core is for.
True.
So I'm thinking he'll have a great season ahead.
Oh, and, I don't.
Mundy, did you ever win Freak of the Week?
Did I ever win Freak of the Week? I think I won it once. I think I won it once because of my route running ability. That was it.
Well, I kind of forget, like, you did split some time between DB and receiver, so you didn't have as many opportunities to maybe win that.
I think I won it one time, and it was the week I think we were playing OU. This is my junior year. I think I won it when I first moved over to receiver. How many years ago was that? I don't even know. I'm showing my age, but
Only 14 years ago, bro.
Oh man, come on, dude. You gotta tell me that. Jesus, we're getting up there. We don't look at those South. You're still looking like young Southwood, like I remember. Back in the day.
Oh my gosh.
But every week, I believe, we would pass that who we would pick amongst ourselves.
It was like Coach Brewer, Meech. I think Don got involved.
Didn't we vote? Didn't the player vote too?
I don't remember voting.
Because I remember both receivers, coaches, core groups would vote, and then
I think they just looked at some film. And just saw, effort and all kinds of other stuff. And they decide, you know what? This guy gets it this week. Freaking crushed it.
Did you ever win it,
Justin? I did. I won it like really early on, like week two of being there. I was thinking, man, this is crazy.
Crazy, yeah.
What do you get then?
I got a shirt.
Right.
So it's got.
Really?
It's a shirt that says Freak Time Showtime. On the front, it says Freak of the Week on the back.
Mm-hmm. I got that. I still have that shirt too. I can't fit it anymore, but
there's two.
I love that.
I got it twice. So I got two different shirts. 1 year and another year. So I went from like black to gray was the next year. I didn't get it that third year. I was mad. But I think it was just because I didn't have fresh legs like I did at the beginning,
Fresh legs.
Because I remember, but I remember, like you said, like running those routes and things like that. So we're going up against first, second team defense. And Mo Gray was complimenting me on my route running and was like, bro, you keep running routes like that, you're going to get in one of these orange jerseys in no time. And that encouraged me. But then literally the next week, we're preparing for Houston, and I'm running all these different screens and tunnel screens, rocket type of stuff, and running all over the field. And I was just like, dude, Southwell, congratulations. Here you go.
Okay, so Freak Show has been a thing for like 14, 15 years. This goes way back. I didn't realize that it went back that far.
I love that it's still going on.
Yeah, that's
because good. I know that Dunn is still there. Like he came on board in 2011, and that was the thing. But as far as I know, that started with Coach Brewer, and I know that he's moved on to Maryland, North Carolina, like Louisville, He's at Virginia Tech now. So I'm seeing tweets that are coming up from Virginia Tech. Oh, freak. Like, hey, that's our thing.
That's our thing.
It's his thing, you know?
Yeah.
So he's just got, and he probably had it wherever he was before Oklahoma State,
with Randy Moss.
Exactly. Randy Moss was the OG freak. That's where it probably all started. He's like, this guy is a freak. Yeah. And you know what? I like that. I'm going to take that with me.
Was it on the, because I haven't been in the wide receiver room, but it's on the wall in there.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently. Was it there when you guys were there? Okay. So this is what I was told last week. Cause I was like, oh, freak. Cause like Strib was so quick with freak. I was like, have you been asked this question before? He's like, oh yeah, we're the freak show. And I do feel like this group of wide receivers lives up to that. Absolutely. Now, I can't go back and think about every set of wide receivers from 2010 to now. No, but what are the expectations of like this? I feel like you can't just call yourself a freak show. You have to deliver as well. So what do you guys think as people who are part of this when it originated, what do you think the standard is to be able to call yourself the freak show?
I mean, let me put it this way. We also used to have no fly zone for the defense.
Right.
I haven't heard that term so much for Oklahoma State DBs recently.
In a while.
So,
which is
bring it back.
Right.
So you got to live up to it.
I agreed. Agreed.
So
agreed.
Dang, yeah.
You got that there. Now, Oklahoma State, even though we haven't had like the same level of freakiness as, say, Justin Blackman, we still have James Washington, Tylan Wallace, guys that are winning Biletnikoffs. Or in the running for it. And then since then, you've got this group that might be across the board near or up to that level of freak athlete. And yeah, they're absolutely living up to it. So it might just be one or two of those receivers that kind of carried that title all the way through. But here we are now, and it's like this whole core freaks.
Right. I agree with yourself because, like you said, Megan, three of them almost had 1,000 yards receiving. So I think they earned that title because even, 2011, my senior year, we had Justin, Hubert. If Hubert just didn't, get as much, he would have been, I don't want to say just as good as Black, but he was very, very talented. And
we had Josh Cooper, Josh Stewart, Isaiah Anderson.
We had three guys. Like, it was always
Tracy Moore.
Exactly. It was always a group thing. It's like whoever went down, a guy could step up, and he's just as good or around that realm, you know? So it didn't matter what receiver we had in the game. We all knew they could perform, you know? And with the defensive side as well, we had, when I got there, 09, Parrish Cox, Markel Martin, all these guys that were just capable of doing the job. Like, there was no doubt. All right, this guy went down. Who's next mentality? Then that's where that camaraderie and those names came from. Anybody could just come in and do the job, you know? And I believe with the receiver core that they've earned that name already. So there's not a doubt in my mind if somebody went down or they keep running four receiver sets that somebody's going to step up and make a play.
All right. So we have a prediction of BP 1,000 yards. Easy. What's your prediction for Rashad Owens? He had 895 last year.
If he had 895, it's like,
but that's tough because
that's tough.
He stepped up in place of Stribling, right?
Yeah.
He stepped up in place of Stribling.
Stribling's coming back.
But we lose Leon Johnson and Jaden Bray.
Right.
We have so many weapons. It's not even funny.
Lack of talent, my ass, whoever said that.
That's right. Like, thank you. It doesn't make any sense.
Get out of here.
And then our running back. Come on, man. I'm going to put it on how many possessions we can get a game. Depends. It's like, how many possessions can we get?
Calling on the defense to get some
turnovers this year. It's going to be in the defensive hands for these guys to reach the numbers that I think we could have 2,000-yard receivers and 1,000-yard rush running back if all the chips fall. Because our O-line is they're really good. From what I've seen, the OU game, everything, they're really good. So I don't see any – it's going to be upon our quarterback and our defense. That's it. That's the only two things that could probably hold these – our talented players back. It's going to be dependent on the defense and our quarterback. Hopefully our quarterback this year, we don't have that many interceptions, you know, which I think he's going to improve on that. So it's just, we're going to see and wait and see, you know, the sky's the limit. That's how I look at it. For Oklahoma State.
I got to ask you about this. You mentioned obviously offense, but defense, and what we maybe haven't touched about on as much as special teams. And I am maybe a little bit more concerned than the average fan on the outside looking in right now, because when we played, we had the guys like Parrish Cox and Dez Bryant that they are so competitive that they get back there and they're just going to turn it up and turn it into a touchdown. Justin Gilbert, another one. Mm-hmm. And back then it was more along the lines of, ooh, I don't know that we can 100% trust our offense to score all the time, 100% trust our defense to stop a score. That was more of what it was. So we really do need our special teams to come up big and make big plays, game-changing plays. What I'm seeing in recent years is a lack of emphasis on that mentality, I guess, and how special teams is approached by Oklahoma State, coaches, players, whatever the case is. Do you think we need to adopt that again, like bring special teams back into the mix and spend more time on it, setting up punt return blocks, kick return blocks, so that we have a chance to make these plays? And I feel like anytime we ever see anything big, it's maybe like a kick block, you know, block the punt, block the kick, whatever the case is. I haven't seen it so much from the return side. I mean, how do you feel about that as a guy that played kick returner, punt returner on scout team? You know how hard it is. Talk about right. That.
So it's number one. You got to be a special type of player to want to be on special teams. Because that's – let's get it. That's where a lot of injuries happen. That's where a lot of the hard-hitting collisions happen on special teams. So, number one, it's hard to get guys that want to do that time in and time out, right? And I think our years we had those guys, and we had it was an emphasis of the game. It was very important to us. We would spend about 3 periods on special teams alone.
It just kind of depended, I guess. Like I feel like we started off practice strong. It was probably like 20 minutes at least per day.
Yeah,
and then on Thursday and walkthroughs, I think we would probably maybe spend a little bit more time. Where we could maybe focus a little bit more on it, but you know, I think we don't have an issue as far as the talent goes, because we just talked about the freaks.
I'm not saying the talent,
and we just lost Jaden Nixon. You know, he was the guy that was the explosive guy that you watch out for on special teams. We still have Brendan Presley back there, obviously, and he had that huge return in Bedlam 2021, but I don't really remember anything since then. I might be forgetting something. I apologize, Mr. Presley, if that is the case. But I think that for us to go undefeated and lead play, we're probably going to need to rely on special teams in the case of how close is this game going to be against Utah? How close is this game going to be against Kansas State on the road? BYU on the road? Colorado at the end of the year on the road? You know what I mean? Like,
right, and this football's three phases to the game, right? Special teams is very important. But let me ask you this. How many of our starters were on special teams last year?
Couldn't tell you. I'd have to
– How many of our guys that were starting was on special teams when we played? Like, dang near the entire defense would be on special teams when we played. Parrish Cox would be out there, the two DBs. Bulldog Brown was out there. They all the guys were out there, you know. So I don't.
Johnny Thomas.
Johnny Thomas, like guys like that that wanted to win. It's like they volunteered to do it. It's not like they were like, nah, let the other guys sit out. That they knew it was a part of the game that we needed. And that's why we had so much success with special teams those years when we were playing. So I don't know if that's the case with this team this year. I don't know. I can't call it. I don't pay attention to the guys that were blocking up front, just the kickoff return and punt return guys. But if they're not, then some of those guys have to step up, you know, and show the young cats how to play special teams. And then that'll spark something with everyone else. And then be like, hey, I can do this. You know, the younger guys got to look at it like, this is a way I could get on the field early. You know, as long as they have that mentality, then
I think it's safe to say that they do. I would say maybe the biggest difference between then and now is we had Coach DeForest.
Oh yeah.
That was in charge of special teams, and he took it very seriously.
100%.
Now I believe we don't have a coach dedicated, an assistant coach at least, dedicated to that phase of the game. And I think it's been maybe a little bit overlooked. I think Gundy is running it, and obviously everybody knows how much I love Gundy and how much I believe he is a great coach.
Yeah.
But if you're going to be the CEO, how effective are you going to be in the role of a special teams coach? I think it's time to hire a special teams coach again and get these guys in that mindset that we're talking about.
I agree with you, because it starts with the coach. The only reason why I would be on special team was because of Coach DeForest. He would talk to you and encourage you to do it and hype you up and make you, hey, you know, you made a play. Especially, remember how crazy you would get if you made a play on special teams? He would like throw a party for you. So it definitely starts with the coach. You know, if the coach is
and if you messed up, he would rip you.
Oh yeah,
You need that. You need exactly. That to learn.
That's what you need. But if the coach isn't in it, it's hard for the players to get in it as well. You know, so I agree with you on that, South. I didn't even know he was coaching the special teams. I did not even know that. Dang, you learn something new every day.
I'll also add, at the next level, think about how many guys make an NFL roster because they play special teams. So, I mean, I just think about, as a Patriots fan, I think about Matthew Slater made an entire career of being a gunner. Like, that was literally, I mean, yeah, he played wide out early on, and then he became like a Hall of Fame special teamer. You don't see that every day, but it's so important. And yeah, we lost Jaden Nixon, which I'm still very sad about because I love Jaden, but we had AJ Green, who did do some returns at Arkansas. He averaged about 16 yards per return. So that's nice. Encouraging. And, you know, as a guy who's going to be backing up Doak Walker, winner, Ollie Gordon, that's a time for him to get in there, shine, and make plays like we saw Jaden and BP make the past couple of years.
And I will backtrack a little bit on what I said about Gundy, because I think it can't be understated how well our kickers have been. In that phase of the game, our kicking has been amazing.
But we lost Hale this year too.
But yeah, so I'm sure that Gundy's got somebody that'll come in and do just as an adequate of a job. But he, you know, year after year, it comes down to, okay, here it is, game on the line. Is this? Can we trust this guy to make the kick for us? Where maybe let's just not even worry about that. Let's get a kick return. Let's, you know, get a punt return and give us a little bit of cushion. So we're not doing cardiac cowboys every single week.
Right. But you got to find those maniacs, man, that want to run down the field and just take somebody's head off, dude. That's when it comes to special teams, that is the bread and butter of it. You have to have maniacs that just, they don't care. They just want to go and hit, because that's what it is. That's why the NFL moved the kickoffs up. So they have more touchbacks, so they can stop those violent collisions. In college, I don't think they did that, right? I think it's still
you can still like fair catch and stuff now.
Exactly. So,
but you know, we had guys like Donald Booker,
maniac. It's just a maniac. Like, you need guys like that that just have no regard for human life. They have no regard.
What's great though is I have seen some of that transition to our defense last year. Like we just had guys, and Gundy talked about it almost every week, just guys throwing their bodies around, complete disregard for their health, essentially. Yeah. And sure enough, you know, we're finding out Nick Martin, he's in a cast now because of stuff that he's, you know, like week three, and he just like played through the pain, straight up didn't care and was just going crazy.
Need those guys. They're very important to every football team, every team.
Well, guys, I'm getting excited for the season, and we're still, you know, 4.5 months away. But I need to say this to Cowboy fans, that if you saw the news that Coach Gundy put his house on the market, do not stress. He is not going anywhere. But if you're interested in an $8 million, 6-bed, 8-bath, 13,000, pushing 14,000 square foot house, do we have the place for you in Stillwater, Oklahoma? It comes complete with a theater room, workout room, 2 utility rooms, pool with a waterfall and hot tub, 2 pool cliffs to jump off, and so much more. So be sure to check it out on Zillow and put your bids in today. But Gundy told people, it's too big of a house for just 2 people. His kids have all moved out. So guys, he's not going anywhere. It's okay. It's okay. He's just downsizing.
Sounds like your typical guest house in Los Angeles. Am I right, Mundy?
Jesus. Yeah. You're not lying about that. The rent here is crazy. Like for a studio, it's like $3,000 out here. It's crazy.
Well, you could have Gundy's 14,000 square foot home for almost $50,000 a month. So that's
come on back to Oklahoma. Come on, Mundy.
But you know, it's a pretty penny. But if you guys, you know, like the 2011 team, I saw someone tweet like we should get all of us to like not from the 2011 team, but someone on Twitter was like, if we all pull our money, we can just have awesome tailgates there. So things to think about. But guys, Oklahoma State fans, if you saw that he's selling his house, it'll be okay. He's not leaving. He's just downsizing. But in this economy, in this market, best of luck, coach, because real estate market is tough.
Is that the same house since we were there, South?
I think it was, yeah.
Man.
I don't know. I never got to go to his house, sadly.
We did a lot of work on that farm, bro. A lot of work. But it was for, I think, charity and, it was for charity, I believe.
I know you have to do some of that stuff, like FCA and everything. For me, it was you need to go home and work for the summer. So I'd go back. I'd go back to OKC. I would wait tables. Try to get a little bit of money so that I could survive. Because, you know, walk on life back in the day, it was tough.
Justin, there are restaurants in Stillwater. You could have waited tables here.
You know, that's a great point. But I also, I had the opportunity to live with my dad at home for free versus paying rent over the summer in Stillwater. And I did do that 1 year. I stayed in Stillwater over the summer. You'd be surprised how much money you can save by just going home and living with your parents for a little while you try to get a kickstart on your career.
Kickstart on life. Quick hits before we wrap this thing up. Congrats to Caroline Wong, who was named the Louisville Slugger NFCA National Player of the Week and Big 12 Player of the Week. Guys, she went 7-for-9 over the weekend versus Houston in their series win. 2 doubles, 4 home runs, 10 RBIs. 7 of those RBIs came in their series finale. Like, I'm sorry, what?
Nightmares for Houston.
She transferred in from Liberty this season. Great add to the team. Our catcher, Caroline Wong.
Jeez.
That's pretty awesome.
Great stats.
Also this weekend, what did we do, guys?
I don't know. Maybe just beat OU again.
That's right.
What else is new?
That's right. So, Justin, you were there. You witnessed it.
I got to be in attendance with my wife and 2 sons. It was amazing. It was windy. It was a blast. That atmosphere in Obrate Stadium, it's top notch. And shout out to, you know, the fans, the students packing that place out, because back to back, maybe two back again, attendance records, 8,000 plus in a baseball game. So I know we had to send OU out to the SEC with one last butt whooping. So glad we were able to do that.
That's crazy. I still can't believe they're not in Big 12 anymore. That's wild.
Also, shout out to the groundskeeping crew. Obrate Stadium has the most immaculate grass I've ever seen. And I don't know how they do it.
Drainage.
But teach me. Teach me your ways. I need my yard to look like this, because if I could wake up every day and see a sliver of what it looks like in the outfield, then life would be complete.
There's like a multi-million dollar drainage system in there, thanks to Cecil Obrate, who will be honored this weekend. He'll be celebrated. The life of Cecil Obrate will be celebrated this weekend with fireworks on Saturday. So that's
exciting. Bagpipes. How do you feel about bagpipes, Mundy?
Well, I'm Irish. I got to love them, right?
You don't have to.
They're a Scottish thing. Please get your please get your cultures right.
Yeah, Irish, you probably should hate them.
I said that. Edit that out.
No, but my parents are coming this weekend, and I might take them to their first OSU sporting event. No, that's not true. We went to basketball last
week. You have to, though.
So maybe we might go on Sunday.
Obrate Stadium.
Obrate. Yeah, we've driven by it. I mean, I've been to Obrate. My parents have not. So we might go to one of the games this weekend. Keep it posted. Report back next week. Yeah. Cool, guys. Well, thank you all for listening to another episode of the Believe in OK State podcast presented by Bet Online. Nehemiah, thank you so much for joining us and chatting about Cowboy football. It's great having you.
I'm happy to be a part of the show. You know, whenever you guys need somebody to chat, I'm available.
Don't say that. He might be calling you in 3 weeks. Okay, come on back.
Yeah. So Eve's official replacement.
I was going to say, this is your tryout, your audition to
I got things I got to work on. I'm not on Eve's level yet. He's a scholar.
Sounds like you are talking about.
That's my guy. That's my guy right there. Young Batobes.
Cool. Well, guys, only thing left to say, go Pokes.
Go Pokes.